This morning we bring to a close the series of sermons that we began just over a month ago on the five marks of mission. These five statements that the Worldwide Anglican Communion came up with and that are meant to encourage us not only in our parish life but also in our individual life as to how we ought to live. And I just want to remind you again that, of course, this was not written as a specifically Anglican thing to do, but it was meant to be something that ought to be characteristic of all followers of Jesus, of all Christians. And so these five statements, all we also recognized, were not simply statements invented as being wonderful principles by which we ought to live, but it was recognized that these five things are indeed what God is already up to in the world. That these marks of mission are indeed God's mission in the world. And so how much more then, as followers of Jesus, and by extension as followers of God, that we ought to be ones who would participate in what God is doing, and indeed busy ourselves with the same activity that God intends for the world. And so this morning, we come to the fifth mark of mission. And this is what the fifth mark of mission says. That we are to strive to safeguard the integrity of creation and to sustain and renew the life of the earth. And that's a really wonderful statement to say. It's a nice one for the fifth one. It kind of encapsulates all things. And so it is definitely worth paying attention to, not just in that summary way, but because it does speak to what God is already doing and what God's perspective is about the creation. Now, I want to draw attention to one particular word in this statement to start with. It says to strive to safeguard the integrity of creation. So the word strive is what I want us to consider to start with. Now, why is it there? Shouldn't we just say to safeguard the integrity of creation? Why do we have to say strive? Well, I think there's a couple of things about that word that help amplify what's going on here. The first thing is that if we are going to strive, it means we're going to attempt something. We're going to try something. We're going to put some effort into it. This means, safeguarding the integrity of creation, we do not have as an option to sit back and do nothing. We cannot simply, whatever will be kind of thing. We can't have a laissez-faire attitude towards it. We are to strive to safeguard the integrity of creation. We are to attempt it. We are to work at it. We are to put effort into it. I think that's an important piece that comes out in this particular mark of mission by using this word. But I think what it also tells us is that this is something that we have to bring to mind, because I don't think it's a naturally occurring thing in human minds in general to safeguard the integrity of creation. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, let me say, first of all, what I don't mean. What I do not mean is that human beings are so horribly and inevitably selfish and users and consumers that nobody thinks about creation. Everybody is just saying, all we want to do is suck all the life out of the planet that we can have and consume everything to the nth degree. And so because of that, we have to change. No, I'm not saying that's how human beings feel, although I'm sure there are some human beings who feel that way, but I would not suggest that that's the overriding attitude human beings have. Instead, what I think happens is that we just tend not to be aware of what our activities are doing often to the creation. That we quite honestly find ourselves carrying on in a particular way and then discovering later, oh, maybe something has to change here. Because it never occurred to us from the beginning, in a rather innocent way, if I can say it that way. By way of example, let me just draw your attention to the province of British Columbia. I grew up in BC. I still love that province very much. And British Columbia, before it became part of the Confederation of Canada in 1871, was already known to be a place where forestry was a pretty important part of the package. The economy of British Columbia was very much centered around forestry in much the same way that Alberta is focused on oil. And when it comes to forestry and forestry practices, we understand that human beings would naturally look at this province with a gazillion trees and say, wow, look at this great source of wood. Because you see, human beings discovered hundreds, thousands of years ago that wood is a rather remarkable substance. It's a rather remarkable resource. You cut down a tree, you make lumber out of it, you can build things, you can shape things, you can build vehicles, you can build structures, you can make tools out of it. Wood is an amazing thing. And then, of course, in more recent years, it was discovered that you can distill some of its particular parts so that you come up with pulp, which can then be made into paper. Now, I would want to ask you, can you imagine what life would be like if we did not make use of wood and paper? It'd be very difficult to imagine what that would be like. I mean, paper itself is so vitally important to us, let alone, of course, the fact that you're sitting on wood, most of you, and we see our buildings constructed with it. The idea of making use of trees and the wood that it provides is something that's been known to human beings for ages. And so when people come into British Columbia and they see a gazillion trees, it's really natural to understand, hey, look at this wealth of wood available to us. And the trees grow, and so we know that they grow back, and this is great. Let's start making use of this great resource. And so people in British Columbia start cutting down trees and start producing lumber and start producing pulp and start producing paper. But then in the early 20th century, somebody starts doing the math a little bit and says, okay, hang on a second. A lot of these trees are a couple hundred years old, and so, yeah, they grow back, but the rate at which we're cutting them down, if we keep this up, eventually we're going to run out of trees. We're going to cut them down before they all grow back, and it seems amazing to think about. Like, who would think? I mean, there's a bazillion trees. Who would think we would ever run out of trees? But somebody was saying, hang on, we got to pay attention to this. Let's start reconsidering what we do here. And so efforts in the early 20th century began where intentional reforestation practices were included into the forestry industry. Rather than just waiting for the trees to grow back on their own, trees were actually being planted in various places. But then from that also became other things that we were made aware of. And there was a thought, wait a second, animals live in the forest. What happens to the animals when we cut down the trees? What happens to the spotted owl? What happens to the squirrels? Their homes get cut down. Maybe we ought to keep that in mind as we are wanting to make use of this wonderful resource as well. For that matter, what about the waterways in the areas in which we cut down trees? What happens to the animals and the fish that rely on the streams? What happens to the water as you go down from the watershed downstream to the people and the animals that require clean water? Are we contaminating that? Maybe we need to consider how we're doing our forestry practices so that we're more mindful of what's happening. And then for that matter, even just the concept of beauty comes into play. I don't think anybody has ever looked upon the vista of a cut block and said, oh, that's beautiful. I need to paint that. I mean, maybe some of the flowers growing up in a mud and amidst the stumps might actually have beauty in them, but generally, you look at clear cut and you're just kind of going, it looks terrible. And so it is not that human beings began with the intention to merely take out every tree from British Columbia and who cares. But in cutting down trees, we've realized, wait a minute, we need to think carefully about what we're doing here and figure out how to have a more sustainable approach to our forestry practices for the sake not only of the trees growing back, but for the animals and even for us when it comes to water and so on and so forth. Not to mention, of course, that trees are the great filtration system in our biosphere, which takes carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and releases oxygen back into it because, you know, you need oxygen to, like, breathe. So this is important that we think about trees. And so you see, the statement to strive to safeguard the integrity of creation needs to be said because we quite honestly just often don't think about it until we start to see maybe something negative is going on. So that's a good reason for us to consider this fifth mark of mission. But there's also more. We find that God is interested in the creation that God has made. That's what I was talking to the kids about already, and you can already connect the dots to that little children's talk. But God loves the creation. God cares about the creation. God's the one who is responsible for the creation being here, and God has indeed been happy for us to find ourselves part of it and enjoying it and making use of it. Our readings this morning help to undergird that point. Now, in our readings, especially in the gospel reading, we see the point of the creation being a secondary point. But the point Jesus makes doesn't work unless there is a significant care on God's part for the creation. You might recall hearing the words that Jennifer read. Jesus is delivering the Sermon on the Mount, and he says to everybody, why do you worry about what you're going to eat or what you're going to wear? And so Jesus says, think about the birds. You know, they don't have any agricultural practices. They aren't putting away grain to store up for the winter. They don't do any of that. Yet, Jesus said, your heavenly Father feeds them. Consider the lilies of the field. Consider the flowers, the grass, these things that are there, and then we end up cutting them down and burning them for fuel so that we can be warm, and they grow back and we do it again. Consider that. All of these things are so incredibly beautiful that even Solomon, the most lavish king in the history of Israel, did not look anywhere as amazing as these simple flowers do. Look, God cares about the flowers. God cares about the birds. Are you not worth much more than they? Of course, the implication is yes, you are. Human life is indeed more valuable than plant life and animal life. Now, we might think, wait a second, I don't know that I want to hear that. That doesn't sound right. Well, listen to what I did not say and what Jesus did not say. In saying, are you not worth much more than they, Jesus is not saying plant life and animal life is worth less. He is not saying that because human life has more value than animal life, that animal life therefore has no value. That's not what is being said. We're acknowledging a hierarchy, but the point is God's care for the creation itself, Jesus is using as the basis for us to have confidence in God's care for us. God's care for creation is fundamental. God created all things. We are part of that creation. And no matter how you slice it, looking at an evolutionary scheme or looking at the 6 days of creation in Genesis chapter 1, human beings show up late in the game. We show up late and arrive on the scene. The creation is important. The creation is loved by God. The creation is something we must recognize and respect as being part of this great world in which God has placed us. We go to the Romans passage, the first reading, and we heard Al talk about, again, a similar theme that Paul is saying that Jesus had said in the Sermon on the Mount. He said, think about all of the difficulties and trials and challenges that you're facing in your life right now. Understand this, that when Jesus comes back to put all things right, when we see the glory that will be revealed to us, all of our struggles are not going to be worth comparing to that. All that we have gone through will become a distant memory when Jesus returns and makes all things right. And then immediately he goes to creation and says, understand that this is what the creation is looking forward to as well. That the creation is longing for the revealing of the people of God. That the creation is groaning as in birthing pains, waiting for the arrival of the fulfillment of the ages when Christ comes to bring all things under him. And so it is not just for human beings that God is at work. It is not just for human beings that Jesus does what he does, but it is for all things that has been created, and we are a part of that, and we are to understand that the thing we long for, the hope that we wait for, is also something that will benefit the creation as a whole. When we consider God's perspective on what has been made, we find that the fifth mark of mission is indeed hitting the nail on the head. We are to strive to safeguard the integrity of creation and to sustain and renew the life on the earth. As much as we are able to do that, we are to keep in step with God and treat the creation as this precious gift that God has indeed created, and he has given to us to manage and manage well. Now, when it comes to putting this down to brass tacks and practical issues, again, there are many sermons that could be written on this particular mark of mission. But just like last week, when we talked about how we are to transform unjust structures of society and challenge violence of every kind and to seek peace and reconciliation, we talked about that specifically in the context of military action and warfare and so on. So also for this mark of mission, I want us to think about this with regard to this most current concern known as climate change. Now here's the thing. I didn't write a paper in my master's degree about climate change. I'm not a scientist. I can't pretend to be, though I appreciate science. I was going to study science before I felt that God was calling me into pastoral ministry. And there are many things about science that I love and that I know, but I'm still not a scientist. So what I want to do is introduce you to someone who is. Dr. Catherine Hayhoe is a Canadian who for the past, well, more than 20 years, has been living in Texas studying climate science. She's a climatologist. This is what she has been studying. Dr. Hayhoe is a Christian. She's an evangelical Christian, actually, living in the Bible Belt of the United States. And her appeal is to not only educate people about the realities of climate change, but also to address many of the questions and even objections that many Christians seem to have about climate change. And she says, I'm a Christian, I'm an evangelical, the climate is changing, and we need to do something about it. And so she has a series of videos on YouTube, and her YouTube channel, you can look it up, is called Global Weirding. And the reason she calls it global weirding is because she says global warming alone is too simplistic a statement. There are many weird things that happen because of the warming of the planet. And so the whole series of videos is meant to talk about some of the weird things that we see and what we could possibly do about it. And so without further ado, let me let you watch a little bit from Dr. Catherine Hayhoe. She talks about climate change and the Bible. You've heard what she's had to say, though. You see the connection of what's being made. And, of course, the piece that is so important is recognizing that the reality of climate change isn't just an academic question, but it affects people around the world, not only people in developed nations living on the coast, but people who are living in challenging nations who do not have the option of moving. And so we end up with a social justice piece with regard to dealing with the rising sea levels caused by climate change. Anyways, I leave that for you to explore, but to end the sermon basically with this understanding that taking the fifth mark of mission seriously is not just about an idea of perhaps we ought to be environmentalists. Sometimes that thought is seen as being distasteful, especially if you're not an activist kind of person, but instead it's far more substantial, it's far more holistic than that. It's involving all aspects of our lives. Indeed, our survival, if you will, on the planet requires that the creation continues to work as it does. Otherwise, we don't get a chance to live. And so let us participate with God in this mark of mission, striving to sustain and to renew the life on the earth and to be ones who ensure that we safeguard the integrity of creation. Amen.